Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
We are now 8 days away from the NFL draft, and Fendrick is in the middle.
I am here.
And he's engaged.
Thanks, engaged. Chris. Yeah, congratulations.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate that.
How did you do it? You throw a football that had a ring on the inside?
That's what I did, and I said, we're moving to Tampa. We got in the car, and we headed south.
Oh.
That's what we did.
That was.
You didn't really go to Tampa. Did
no,
you?
I didn't go to Tampa. That's what you did.
Yes, I mean I did.
You were like,
engagement story was the exact same as Chris Sims.
No,
mine was throw the ring on her lap and make the flight arrangements.
Yeah, I didn't do that. Yeah. I didn't do that.
Oh, your phrase was make the flight arrangements?
Yes, we had some.
I thought it was we're headed to Tampa.
No, this is some young Chris Sims. Stupid meanness. Sorry.
I was slightly more calculated than that.
Slightly and more gentlemanly. And
I tried.
Yeah.
And romantic.
Yes. Yeah. All of the above.
Romance was not abundant in your engagement?
Well, no, it was not.
That's okay.
I was not a very good start of the marriage husband or boyfriend or
I guess I'd like to
fiance.
Know the most romantic thing you've ever done.
Well, every day is a romantic day in your household, right?
Well, I mean,
except for Valentine's Day.
Exactly right.
Yeah, but what's the stereotypical romantic?
I don't know. I think like anniversary 1 year in Tennessee, I took her on like a picnic.
Ooh.
And like got takeout food from a place and got it all set up.
Red and white checkered blanket on the ground.
Right, that kind of whole
look.
Oh,
I love that.
I did do that.
That's good.
That was probably about as good as it got for me.
I might steal that idea too.
Yeah, I might do that this weekend.
Yep.
Thanks, Chris. We have a lot to get to. We're going to have Peter King on the phone for a little bit. Wasn't really feeling great. Couldn't come in. But I have a lot to talk to him about. Mainly, how do you navigate the rumors in the next 8 days?
Because
my phone with the BR app, every
blowing
the Patriots
up.
Are looking at Josh Rosen. No, yeah. They're all popping up now.
You're connected to the mothership. I mean, you are Spock right now. Captain Spock is here.
You are batting 1,000. I wear this shirt. Spock jokes come out. I have an awesome theory about what the Browns should do.
Well, the mothership sent me an alert.
Sims, about the Patriots.
Sims has a jam-packed draft notebook. We're going to get into rumors that he's hearing about the Broncos, the Browns, the top five. Five D linemen that shouldn't be top five, the D linemen that should be top five, and we're going to go and break down Shaquem Griffin for the first time. He just watched the film, so we have a lot of draft stuff to get to, and maybe, just maybe, Phil Sims picks up the phone this week.
I hope
so.
And
we can ask if he got at least 1 minute of sun. Under 1 minute of sun.
Oh, no, the big blowhard. I know he did. Yeah, he seemed like he had a good time.
Really?
He said he did.
All right, good.
I don't know. We'll see.
It is, the number for this Wednesday is 62. Sims.
62.
We're going to do it like this. I'm going to say the team, and you tell me who on that team is 62. You were very good at this for 61.
Yes.
Buffalo Bills. Guard.
Oh, I was going to say the center would, but no, who is it? Go ahead.
Vladimir Dukas.
Damn, wouldn't have got that.
Minnesota,
damn it. It's Mitch Berger's not 62.
It's Nick Easton.
Damn, I knew it was one of those three.
For two.
They're all the same. Minnesota has these three interior offensive linemen. They literally look like they were like white guys cut out of like a cookie cutter.
Yes.
Like they have the same body.
Patriots.
The Patriots, 62. Damn, I'm really crapping the bed here. Hold on. The center is not 62.
NC State.
Oh, it's Thuny.
Joe Thuny.
Thuny. I was going to go with him.
Eagles.
Eagles is Kelsey.
Yep. And then the Bucks.
Oh, the Bucks.
Starting guard Evan Smith.
Evan Dietrich Smith, right?
All right, so...
I was not good on that one.
That was rough.
Yeah.
You got Kelsey, though. So Hall of Famer, Miami center guard in the 70s, Jim Langer.
Right.
Atlanta offensive lineman Todd McClure for most of the 2000s. Guy McIntyre, three-time Super Bowl winner for the 49ers in the 80s.
Right.
Marco Rivera for the Green Bay Packers is a three-time Pro Bowler. Remember Adam Timmerman? On the St. Louis Rams, two-time Super Bowl offensive lineman
sure.
for that. Greatest show on turf. Jeremy Newberry, center for the 49ers
Damn.
Back in the 2000s. I just remember all of these guys from Madden.
Not a lot of
That's
good
how I remember these
Not
teams,
your number.
And then
no.
Dan Neal, the guard from the Broncos
right.
back in the 2000s.
Yeah, Dan Neal.
Not a great... There's a Hall of Famer, Jim Langer, but other than that, 62's open.
It really
so
is.
So Saquon, pick up 62, blow it away. I caught Russell Wilson's show last night, and I mentioned it to Sims.
Was it the first episode?
I don't know. It was cool. Yeah, so he did. I saw one with Mason Rudolph and then one with Saquon Barkley.
Right.
And I was like, Sims, did you catch it last night? And he was like, it was the worst thing I've ever watched in my entire life.
It was horrible. I couldn't give it much time. I mean, I watched the preview the night before with Saquon. I mean, it's like... I don't even know what to say. It's not even like real talk. It was like, it's two guys, and we'll just talk about how cool we are
together.
Just
talk football. Trade advice.
I enjoyed it.
Did you?
I went into it, and I went, I'm not going to go, what would Gruden do? Because
right.
it's not that dynamic.
Right.
Gruden was must-watch TV because he put those rookies on, like, on nerve, and you didn't know what he was going to do.
Yes.
The thing about Russell is he is such... Like, when I talked about people in, like, philosophy, he is, like, one of those guys where you're like, you don't really talk like this, do you? And he'll sit there and he'll go, listen, in life, bad things are going to happen, and it's about how you respond. Like, it's just constantly reading, like, calendar quotes. But you hated it. One.
I felt like that's what it was. You're right. It was just like coach talk all the time. And again, I like Russell Wilson. It's not against him. But yeah, just the show itself was a little disappointing to me. Certainly not on the same level as Gruden camp.
No.
Not even
not
in the
even
same.
Close. Some of the things I thought was interesting, during the regular season, he swims every Monday morning. That was something I learned.
Right.
And I was like,
get the soreness out.
That's a really interesting thing that mm-hmm. I haven't heard any other NFL player talk about.
Some teams do that. Like even in the summer and training and like the spring.
Mandatory swimming?
We would have a workout. It would be like it wasn't mandatory.
It's
It'd
a
be
weightless
like,
exercise.
You can come Friday, and we're going to have this exercise set up for you, and there's going to be coaches there, and we're going to have a little workout, but it's just a good way to get a little exercise in and not kill yourself, like you said.
I thought also the Mason Rudolph one.
Right.
He interrupted Russ Wilson so many times that I was like, dude, he interrupts. And it made me self-conscious about me interrupting you.
Yeah.
I was like, is that what it sounds like for me? And I was like, I would never draft a Lefko.
I don't even know it. I don't even notice it anymore. Yeah. I really don't. It's like maybe it's ingrained in my DNA.
After four years, you've just gotten used to it.
Exactly right.
And then the last
Mason
thing,
Rudolph, that's another one, too. I mean, again.
You were the first person I thought of. I went, look at his body.
Well, I mean.
I was like, this is not. Like Josh Allen, like Mason Rudolph, if I took my shirt off and Mason Rudolph took his shirt off, it's a competition.
He was never in the first round until the Patriots had him up for a visit. And now he's in the mock draft. Like, there's no, if Mason Rudolph goes in the first round, I will get on my knees and kiss your feet when we're doing the live show. I promise.
Yes.
I mean, there's
let's get that down.
Automatic F grade?
Oh, what? I mean, that's going to be yes. If you draft him, yes. He wouldn't even have been in top six. He wouldn't be the next six or seven guy for me.
The one thing, though, that I really took from the Russell Wilson show was the Saquon episode.
Yes.
And just seeing Saquon next to Russell Wilson and realizing that I don't even think they're the same species. And Russ going, I've never seen a football player built like that before. And then Russ is throwing him rockets and he's one-handing catches out of the backfield. Russ called him a freak. He goes, this kid's a freak. And for me, I think Russell Wilson's a freak.
Yeah.
And for him to call that to Saquon.
Freak on freak crime.
I left and was like, oh my God, Saquon's incredible.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I took from it. But I agree. Like, I don't think I could watch five episodes of Russell Wilson doing that. But I appreciated it for what it was.
Sure.
But he's definitely not a John.
Yeah, that's probably why I didn't like it much. I was just expecting more. And I'm not going to, that kind of talk, I've been around that kind of talk my whole life. So I understand maybe how some fans and everything like it. I'm not trying to downplay that.
It was a lot like when you go through something tough, it's important that you call it a gap play and you let it go. And for someone like you, it's like, dude,
I've had those conversations 9 million times in my life.
All right, so I'm going to give my Brown theory before we call Peter.
I don't know. I think we got to call him first.
Let's call Peter then.
That's kind of Peter King. He's
get him
a little
line.
More of a big deal than you, Spock. Sorry.
You think so?
Just a hair.
The Spock episode of the podcast.
The Spock. Number 62 is Spock.
No, I've worn this shirt many times.
I know. But
you
still
can't
like
get over it.
I know. I loved it.
I'm a firm believer that when people comment on your clothes, it means they like them.
Yeah. Okay. Sure.
Like, if I didn't like his shirt, I'd be like,
how about that shirt? Great long sleeve. Really fashion trendsetter
look
today.
Look at him. He's got some pep in his step.
Pep hello.
In his... Oh, hello.
Hello.
What's up?
Nothing. What's up? We're on the podcast right now, so don't say anything, you know, crazy there, Peter King, okay?
I don't have anything crazy to say right now.
Darn it. Okay, fine. How you doing, man?
I'm just sitting here imitating Tom Brady, having some vitamin water zero.
Ooh, nice and clean.
I've got the A's and the White Sox on the TV in my office. You guys are so excited about that.
Yes, A's, and I can't even get into baseball yet. I can't even like watch the Yankees, who are my favorite team.
You know why you can't get into baseball?
Don't
right
do
now?
It, Peter.
Because, no, I'm just telling you because the NFL figured out a way to ridiculously captivate everybody on the planet for 4 months by endless, stupid, idiotic, worthless debates about whether Josh Allen deserves to be picked 1 or 41. I mean, this is really not sort of the NFL that I signed up to cover, really. It's insane. Whole thing's insane.
I was going to ask you, so I think these last 2 months, it's a lot of swirling rumors. I never know what to believe. These next 8 days are those last 2 months on steroids. And I was going to ask you for advice on how to handle this, but it sounds like we both need advice.
I wrote as my haiku the other day, believe one in every 50 things that you read, you know, and are you here? Because, look, the bottom line is, I say this to people all the time, in the football world, the way I explain to people what has happened to the football world is that in 2000, when I went to cover the NFL scouting combine in Indianapolis, I had an hour and a half lunch one day with Plexico Burress, who really didn't have much to do one of the days he was in Indianapolis, and there was 15 or 20 reporters there covering the combine. Last year, I don't know what the number was this year, but last year there were 1,243 credentials issued for the press at the scouting combine.
Man,
so I'm just basically saying that we are in an era when at the end of February, instead of everybody getting lives, he is listening to absolutely worthless pablum from coaches and players and GMs, you know, just kind of promoting the NFL. I hate to be so negative about all of it, but really nothing happens really between, say January 5th or whenever the last college game is played and April 26th, and yet we make it the most exciting season in the world. If you ask a Cleveland Browns fan.
Yeah.
You know, if you ask a Cleveland Browns fan, he would tell you that April 26th is more exciting to him than October 26th. And honestly, it's just a little bit sad.
Yes, it
because
is.
Because it means that he has absolutely no faith in his team to ever win. And so the chase has become the favorite thing for the Cleveland Browns instead of the actual getting somewhere. It's like I've heard Browns fans say, okay, let's take Barkley at 1. We don't love any quarterback, so let's trade the 4th pick again. Stop trading.
Yes.
And start picking.
Yes.
Enough.
Yeah. Yo, I like that you just ranted on that whole topic because it's something that both Lefko and I here go crazy with at times, just these stories that are not really stories that come to fruition. But this is where, like, I want to just hit on something you said because, all right, first of all, you are Peter King. You're the man. You've been around forever. Your connections are,
top of the line.
Exactly right, around the NFL. I just, for you personally – how do you balance out what to believe with some of your personal relationships this time of the year? Do you know?
Yeah, because if a coach tells him something and he reports it, right, it's a shockwave.
Right. So, like, how do you balance, you know, the coach, the GM you might know, the agent you might know, and how to kind of maybe process or connect dots with all the information they give you?
I think things have changed massively in the last, say, 10 or 12 years. On my podcast this week, I've got Ernie Accorsi. And so what I did, I wanted to do something different this week. And this is a long-winded way of answering your question, but you'll get it after you hear about this. So on my podcast, I sat down with Ernie Accorsi last week in his apartment building in Manhattan, and we talked for 50 minutes.
Right.
And so for those who don't know, so Accorsi was a rookie general manager with the Baltimore Colts in 1983. That was the huge quarterback draft, the Elway, Marino, Ken right. O'Brien, you know, Jim Kelly, Todd Blackledge. That was the huge quarterback draft of 1983. And then he was also the GM of the Giants when the Giants picked they ended up picking Philip Rivers and trading him for Eli Manning to San Diego. But anyway, the point I was going to make is that, so, you know, this is a weird way to look at this, but Ernie Accorsi basically explained in both instances all the little wins and all the little factors that buffeted him on the way to making his pick. And in 2004, I actually was part of the reason why the Giants ended up with Manning in a very weird way, and I'll explain to you how it happened and how it would never happen in a million years today, I don't think.
Right.
But in 2004, the Chargers had the first pick in the draft, and everybody knew that Eli Manning had said, I'm not playing for the Chargers, and I kept hearing that the Chargers were going to pick him anyway. And I called somebody who was close to A.J. Smith, the general manager of the Chargers, on Friday. And I said, what's going to happen tomorrow? The draft was on Saturday morning. I said, what's going to happen tomorrow? And this person said to me, I think A.J. is going to pick Eli Manning at number one. And then when the Giants are on the clock at number four, he's going to call Ernie Accorsi and try to make a deal. I said, interesting. Hmm. And I said, are you sure? He goes, I'm pretty sure, but, you know, we'll see. So I made a round of phone calls that day. I didn't hear this anywhere else. And so I called every team at the top of the draft before the draft just to find out what was going on. And I called Ernie Accorsi. And I said, hey, a word to the wise, I think you might be getting a call from A.J. Smith, you know, during your pick. And at the time, Ernie didn't think he would be getting that call because A.J. told him, I'll call you this week. I'll call you on Friday.
Right.
And he never called him.
Thinking that there'd be a deal done before the draft started.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And he said, and so Ernie said he never called me. So I just figured it was over. Mm. And so I planted that seed in his head. And so I asked him this week on the podcast, did that have anything to do with what happened on Saturday? He says, yes. As a matter of fact, it did, because I am always a guy who doesn't waste any time when I'm making my pick. And at the time, when they were picking four, they weren't going to take Philip Rivers. They were going to take Ben Roethlisberger.
Right.
Or they were going to take a trade with Cleveland at number seven. But he told me, I doubt I would have done that because I feared somebody jumping up and getting Roethlisberger. Turns out Roethlisberger didn't get picked till 11. But anyway, I think the Giants would have just sat there, picked Roethlisberger right away and went on their merry way. But he said, because you had given me that little heads up, I said, well, who knows? We should wait. Maybe A.J. will call. And he said, I'll give him a few minutes. So at the seven-minute mark, his secretary, Janice Gavazzi, Ernie, A.J. is on the phone. And so they made the deal in about 6 minutes, and the rest is history. But my whole point of telling you that story is not to say, gee, what a vitally important guy I am to the history of the NFL.
Well, you are, but go ahead. Keep going.
Yeah, it's simply to say that times have changed, and I don't think, like right now, this is just my opinion.
Yes.
I don't think John Dorsey is telling a soul, even people on his own staff, here's exactly what I'm going to do.
Right.
Because he doesn't want anybody to find out so that they can, so that he can maybe get one-upped or
right.
he decides to trade. I mean, he just wants to be able to use all that power, and so he doesn't want anybody to know what he's going to do. And so right now, just my opinion, I don't think there are many people, if any, in that organization who know exactly what Dorsey's going to do.
There's...
Well, I just think that's it. So I mean,
I was going to say that for later, but Sims is hearing that.
Yeah, yeah, I heard the same thing, and we were going to talk about this at some point. But I was told that he hasn't told anybody what his plan is at number one, and he wasn't even going to tell the owner until the night before the draft. So that's just
God forbid he talks to a homeless person.
It's good to hear you say that. But wait, so yeah, you don't think. In this day and age, even with somebody, you know, as big time as you and everything, it's just the current media landscape. You don't get those private conversations with maybe the people you used to that they just don't trust the media anymore?
No, I think it's that I'll go back to Jacksonville taking Blake Bortles, Mike Shanahan taking Jay Cutler.
Yes.
They feel like, I'm not going to tell anybody, and I'm literally not going to tell anybody. Mike Shanahan didn't tell a soul till an hour before the draft. I'm not sure that Dave Caldwell told anybody until right before the pick. And his reason is that, you know, these walls have ears. And he doesn't know deep down who in his organization
yes.
or whether his owner you know, has a buddy, you know, at ESPN or something like that. He
right.
just doesn't know who everybody knows and who everybody talks to. So to just ensure that nothing is going to happen, and this is, Bill Belichick does this, everything is done on a need-to-know basis.
Yes.
Remember the year where they take Ross I. Dowling, high in the draft, this cornerback from Virginia.
Yes, sure.
And all of his scouts that year, I mean all of his scouts that year, wanted either him to take Jabal Sheard or Brooks Reed.
That's right.
Okay, and so that year, all of his scouts, they're not even in the room, but they're in an ante room, and they hear just at the time that the pick is being made that they're taking Ross I. Dowling, and their jaws hit the floor. They were utterly, absolutely, totally shocked and had no idea.
That's talking with Jalen Collins, too, right?
Bill Belichick tells people things only on a need-to-know basis.
Yes. Yeah. I've been there for that kind of draft with New England, so
yeah.
I've seen it happen. Yes, you're right. Jamie Collins.
Yeah.
I mean, I was sitting in that obscure room that Peter's talking about, and we got word that Jamie Collins is going to be picked, and I'm just going to tell you, the scouts, they jaws dropped. They were walked out of the room shaking their head. So you're right. I mean,
but Bill is always right.
I
got one last thing for you, Peter. Talk about ears, and you're worried about things getting out. I started a campaign with Joe Montana. He's aboard. We're doing it on the podcast. The listeners are aboard, and I'm going to enlist your help.
Here you go again.
I'm a firm believer that there's a man missing from the Hall of Fame, and his name is Phil Sims. If you don't think he's warranted based on his playing career, I think when you add in 20 years of broadcasting, I can't believe he's not even ever mentioned. And when there's one person in the media that I think carries a big stick and people fall in his wake, it is you, Peter. And I'm just curious, where is it possible to start this campaign for Phil?
I think it's possible. I think one of the things that happens is that, you know, Phil Sims is sort of in the category to me of like a Ken Anderson, a guy who kind of has fallen through the cracks of history.
Right.
And, I mean, really did so much over, you know, in my opinion, he either would have been in if he didn't get hurt in 1990.
Right.
Because, you know, that obviously, if he was the quarterback instead of Hostetler in that game, you got two Super Bowl wins. You got really making the Giants competent offensively for the first time in more than a generation, and that would have changed everything for him.
Right.
And I'll always believe the injury he suffered in think December 1990 in a Saturday game against Buffalo. He hurt his foot.
Yes.
And that really has been a huge roadblock to him in the Hall of Fame. But I think one of the issues now is, and I think it's going to be a big issue, is that there are going to be so many quarterbacks,
yes,
with gaudy, incredible numbers,
right,
who are going to be coming up in the next few years, that Phil is going to be stacked up against these guys, even though his era is slightly different than theirs.
Right.
And it's going to be hard for him. But
yeah.
I covered those teams for 4 years, and I saw how incredibly important Phil Simms was to the greatness of those teams. So I certainly would be a backer of his in that campaign, and I wish you luck. I really do. I'm dead serious about it.
All right, so this is, I mean, you were supposed to come in today. You're not feeling your best, so we, you know,
And you're busy because you're Peter
King. And you're Peter King. So, but you're coming in. You 2 weeks?
I'll come in the week after the draft.
Okay, you the man. That would be awesome.
Appreciate you, Peter.
Thanks for coming on, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Awesome. And you can, of course, check out his work at mmqb.si.com.
Yep.
If you go to mmqb.com, you'll see office furniture.
I think if you go to the mmqb.com, that works as well. It redirects you. Yeah, okay. The MMQB.
Peter is
the man.
Peter is a point where he's so well connected that he knows so much information,
yes,
that if I were him, I would be telling secrets by accident because I wouldn't even remember all the things that I've heard.
Can you imagine Lefko, the reporter, during draft season?
What? You know, Todd Bowles, Bill Belichick just told me they're gonna draft them at 31. You're crazy.
Man. But yeah,
he's amazing.
All right, my follow-up to that is Giants fans, you pissed you don't have Ben Roethlisberger?
Right?
Isn't that crazy? It looks great. Eli had two, but I think Ben could have gotten two.
Well, he did
also
get two.
Also, that's exactly. But Big Ben in New York?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Well, I know this about Ben.
Think about that media.
That would probably be one of the issues, too, though. Big Ben, the one knock about him coming out at the time was that he was so much more immature than the other two.
And Eli has been so great with the media
right.
his entire
they
career.
They recognized, I think most
Except
teams at that time recognized, like, Roethlisberger was the most talented one. But, like, Philip was, like, you know, on the verge of, like, having his fifth child and already at that time. So he was, like, a grown man. Eli is a Manning, and he's learned from his brother, and he's stand-up. And Ben was, you know.
He was Ben.
Ben was Ben at the time. You ever go back and look at back old pictures of Ben?
Yeah.
Long white tees, got a piece and chain hanging out. I mean, not your typical.
And he had those off-the-field issues, which were disgusting.
Which were immature at their very early point of his age, their career, right?
But that's interesting. The other thing there is, here's what I understand about the Hall of Fame voting.
Yeah.
All these quarterbacks are coming with all those gaudy numbers. You are in the room because you're some of the smartest media members that's ever covered this game.
Yeah.
And if you're incapable of realizing that cornerback rules, defensive rules, offensive rules, styles of offenses, what quarterbacks are asked to do, the amount of throws during each game, if you're not able to process that those numbers are inflated and that what Phil Simms did in that era is insane and that his yards per completion compared to today is like double because he was bombing it, and he played with Parcells, and he played with Belichick, and he was helping with Lawrence Taylor, and he got the first Super Bowl in the NFC East when the Washington Redskins, New York Giants, Dallas Cowboys, and all those teams were at their forefront, and the Eagles had one of the best defenses of all time.
Right.
Well, then maybe you shouldn't be in the room.
Well, I think that's a little bit what Peter's saying. Like, Peter's one of those guys that should be in the room, right? But I think what he's saying is it's hard to overcome some of the maybe idiots that are in the room who can only look at the bottom line of the stats.
But even if the idiots in the room can't look at the stats, can't we look at the 20-year broadcasting career and
right,
he's tied for most Super Bowls called all time?
Sure.
Like,
yeah, I mean,
just
a contributor. I'll say this. When my dad retired, he was in the top 20 all time in wins as a starting quarterback. That's a pretty big stat, too. But whatever. I don't really care about all that. But you did give me the jumping off point where I don't understand why the media necessarily gets that vote anyways. I don't understand it. Why, as an NFL player, don't I get to vote on who gets in the Writers Hall of Fame? I can read and write. In fact, I know more about their job than they do about mine. So why do they get to make a lifelong statement on some guy's career to go, and I've said this before, I've been in press boxes. I mean, I'm writing my article for tomorrow. I'm tweeting something out. Oh, loud cheer. Ooh. Oh.
Touchdown.
Julio Jones is good. He caught another touchdown. Let me go back to writing this.
Yes.
And so that's their context of the game. And
but
to
Chris,
me,
he's a plus two on that play.
But that's it's
you
just
like my scouting voice.
But that's just
okay,
not,
sorry.
It's just not. It's just not fair to me. Right. To, in my eyes, to me, that's where a Hall of Fame has a serious flaw. They have to get the ex Hall of Fame players to vote, which I think they do, right?
I think so.
And I think they got to find some way to incorporate coaches or players, something
yes.
involved in it.
But my thing is this: Peter is, in my mind, a lighthouse for this profession.
Yeah.
He shines his light on something and then everyone reacts.
Yeah,
his
right.
article comes out on Monday, the world reacts the entire day
right.
because he's more connected in my mind than really anybody.
Yeah.
To say that we are coming up on an issue in which inflated stats are going to make it hard for people in previous generations, we need to do something about it.
I know, but see,
you can't say there's an incoming problem and then go, well, everyone before 2004 screwed.
Yeah.
Like, that's not how it works.
After the draft, this summer, we're going to kick this into high gear.
Yeah. Some of those,
but he did say that he would support the cause.
Yeah,
he did.
So we have Joe Montana.
And Peter
King. We have
King.
Peter King. And we have the hundreds of thousands of Sims and Lefko listeners behind us.
Who we're going to have. We need to write some letters to David Baker this summer. That's what we need to do. He gave us the address. I'll go back and
that's
get
what
it.
What we should do.
Yeah, we're going to flood the mailbox.
Baker, if he doesn't put my dad in, I'm going to go bear wrestle him to the ground like the bear he
David
is.
Baker is the last guy in the world
lock.
I would want to wrestle.
I mean, seriously, we should basically be David Baker versus the grizzly bear. Like, who's going to win?
All right, so
I would pick David Baker.
No.
So you heard that. Now, Peter's confirming it, that Dorsey is not telling anybody.
Yes.
But guess what?
What?
I'm going to tell Dorsey what he needs to do.
Oh, here it comes. Captain Spock, the GM, is coming.
Can I beam you up to Jen Dorsey's office? Yes, you may. Here is what we're doing. At number one, the Cleveland Browns should select Saquon Barkley.
Okay.
I said this months ago. I'm just reaffirming it.
Sure. I got no problem with that.
At number four, the Cleveland Browns should select Bradley Chubb. Here's why. Number one, you're getting a generational running back, and you're getting the pass rush duo of Myles Garrett and Chubb.
Yeah, which would be one of the best duos in the sport right off the bat.
Number two, you're getting probably the top two players on most teams' draft boards.
Yeah.
I don't think the quarterbacks are higher than them if you're just doing points.
Right.
Number three, we are coming off a Final Four in the NFL where three of the quarterbacks were Nick Foles, Case Keenum, and Blake Bortles. For months, we talked about the quarterback position is very important. At the same time, if you have a great team, you can overcome that. Number four, everyone's coming forward right now and saying that none of these quarterbacks are Carson Wentz or Deshaun Watson or Andrew Luck.
Right.
None of them are guaranteed. And number five, you have Tyrod Taylor. You have a top 20 quarterback in the NFL right now. I don't know why you don't lock up.
I think he was outside of my top 20, but good.
In that
I got
range.
You. I know. I'm being funny.
Nick Foles was in your 30s, and he was good enough to win the Super Bowl.
Right.
He was around Case Keenum.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You have an ample enough quarterback, but you can get a generational offensive player, a lock. You have Chubb, which I don't want to say he's a lock like Saquon, but he's guaranteed to be a good player.
No doubt. He's a lock to be a starting guy that's going to be at a high level and is going to get a handful of Pro Bowls.
And I'm not saying, ooh, find that Mason Rudolph in the second round. No, maybe you don't draft a quarterback this year. I'm just saying, if you got two locks and you know that the Giants, if Saquon's off the board, will probably go quarterback, and we know the Jets are going quarterback, why not get the locks and then visit this next year? The Browns, if you don't win the Super Bowl next year, no one's going to freak out. I just think that's the move to go.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the way to go.
I mean, obviously, it's a different take.
I get your
I'm
take.
I'm just sitting there going, you can get the two top guys on the board.
Right.
And we'll figure out that maybe there's a guy next year. If you're not 100% confident, but you know those two guys are going to
do it. Yeah, well, I think that all that we're getting back to is what their board is, right? And where do they have those guys rated,
I don't want you to pretend. I want you to think about, would that be a good move? What do you not like about it? What do you like about it?
I think that my biggest thing is it's still the quarterback position. These guys are still first-round talents, without a doubt. They're still all top 20 picks to me.
Gotcha.
So the quarterback position, yes, even though none of them are on the value chart probably as good as Saquon or Chubb.
Right.
the importance of the position is going to knock that grade up a little bit higher as well. And to me, you talk about next year. Sure, that sounds
you
great.
You went on all these rants this postseason about quarterback
can
play.
Just let me finish my fucking point, you loudmouth interrupter.
I pulled a Mason Rudolph.
Sorry
loud
for the
mouth
swear.
Spock. Yes. Oh, I just thought you were going to go.
But my thing is, you don't know next year either. I mean, I was told all year this is the most special quarterback class we've ever seen, and it's not as good as last year's class.
Right.
So I get that, but you don't know next year from the standpoint of what the quarterbacks will be. Okay, I will just stop.
I'm not fucking.
You were about to say
anything.
Something, and I mean, it's the NFL. 1 year, Cleveland could be in the playoffs next year. I mean, Cleveland could be in the playoff conversation. Would you be shocked if Cleveland ended up like 6-10 or 7-9
next
year?
What I'm saying is if they draft Saquon and Chubb with Tyrod Taylor,
that it can happen.
I think that team can make the playoffs.
Okay. But I think I would also say that I don't think Tyrod is the type of guy that's going to bring your team too much farther. Okay, that's where I would go. And Tyrod, at the point of his career right now, okay, what is Tyrod in here? 8 or 9, roughly, I think, somewhere in that category.
Josh will look at
it. I mean, he's just not a franchise quarterback to me. He's always going to be looking to replace him, and I get you could still win with games with them.
Right.
And if Tyrod Taylor...
I'm not saying he's the future.
No, I know.
I'm just saying you're locking those two guys into the future, and we'll come back to this at a later
time. It's a good thought. I just still think you got to go to the quarterback, and you got to go to the quarterback at number one, really, I think, because you just got to get the guy that you know you at least have the most confidence in out of the quarterbacks that are in it.
If it's Sam Darnold at number one, and you know that, then do you go with
Lefkoe's
theory?
Well, I don't like that, but it doesn't matter what I do. Okay. Yes. I mean, I've been arguing that from the start. You know, to me.
Tyrod going into his eighth year.
He's going into the eighth year. Yeah.
He was hurt in 2014.
I mean,
though.
Your points are just. They really are.
My thing was just, I listened to you for 2 months talk about how we overvalue the quarterback position. Mm-hmm. And the number one argument you're giving back to me right now is, well, it is the quarterback position.
Right.
So I'm just seeing your argument and going, we just went through this.
Yeah, I hear you. I understand that, too. I get it.
Because Tyrod, with Josh Gordon, Jarvis Landry, David Njoku, Duke Johnson, Saquon Barkley, Carlos Hyde, and that offensive line, and then those pass rushers, like maybe you build a team that when you draft a quarterback next year, I don't know.
I understand.
Maybe a trade for a quarterback that exists.
They're good.
Yeah.
They are. Now, the thing is, this is where the quarterback value comes in, though. So we've seen this year where if you build a good team, you can make average quarterbacks look pretty good, and it doesn't matter.
Jaguars, Vikings,
but,
Eagles.
Yes. But the problem is those teams kind of went through the perfect year. Too, where none of their key players got hurt or anything
not
like
true.
That.
Well, right? Not true with the Eagles, but I know what you're saying.
Yeah, well, the Eagles was the quarterback. I mean,
and Peters. Yeah,
okay. All right. But still, the team was there regardless. And I just think where you miss out is if you have a year where you lost a few players in free agency or you did have a few injuries in training camp, what the quarterback does do is he covers holes. Like we see Aaron Rodgers or some of the other good quarterbacks to where we go, man, these teams aren't very good, but their quarterback can play at such a high level. He's worth almost 2 or 3 wins for the team every year because of what he does in the fourth quarter. So that's where...
Do you think Saquon can have that kind of an impact? Because I think he can.
Saquon could be the best player in the NFL next year.
So,
okay.
Hold on, let's just take that sentence.
Yeah.
If he could be the best player in the NFL in his rookie year, then why am I going to draft a quarterback that has a 50% success rate?
Yeah, okay. I get your thoughts.
Yeah.
I know. I get that all the way. But Saquon Barkley could also be open like 75 times next year, and Tyrod Taylor decided to leave the pocket and scramble, and he never gets the ball.
Yeah.
So that's the other side I'd throw to you, to where I'd go, damn, if Tyrod would just stay in the pocket, which is my number one complaint about him all the time, or just throw the ball down the middle. So, I'm not trying to argue you. I don't even know what I'm saying. I'm saying your points are good. But it's still the quarterback position. You don't know when you're going to be in this spot. And we have to take into account how they have him drafted, not how I see him.
I know. My thing is, I watch.
Even though I'm usually right.
I just watched the Jacksonville Jaguars have an amazing success with the 70th ranked quarterback in
the
NFL.
But you're missing the point is that it is the best team on the sport. It's not even close. It's the best team in the sport.
Yes.
So that's where you got to talk about it, too.
Yeah.
So if Cleveland can be the best team in the sport, then fuck, yeah, that's right. Forget the quarterback thing.
If you yell at me again, we're going to fight.
That was a good disagreement. I haven't had one of those in a while.
It wasn't even a disagreement. I was just we're talking it out.
Yeah.
And like, I would love to fight you. Love it. Good. Love it.
That's not how it goes. So anyway, so I want Saquon.
Gabe wants to see it too.
Gabe is like, yo, as soon as we bust that ass. So I want Saquon to go to Cleveland, but you know who doesn't want Saquon to go to Cleveland?
His representation.
Agents. Yeah. Rock Nation, however, does not want him to be taken number one, according to a writer for SI, Ben Baskin. They don't want him in Cleveland. They want him to go second to Giants and play in the media capital of the world. Reportedly, they approached him about pulling an Eli, which is very funny that Peter just told that story.
Yeah.
And Saquon was like, absolutely not. The other reason that I want Saquon, that I watched in that Russell Wilson thing, when you talk about the perfect human for the NFL, when you talk about a guy that every time he was around Brian Westbrook or Fred Taylor and like all the other running backs are like walking around, he's up there like, how did you get longevity? How did you like do this?
And he's the face of the franchise type running back.
And he's, but he's like a good guy that like.
Handsome as hell.
He's everything.
Handsome as hell.
And what I would tell Rock Nation is, you're ruining this.
Yeah.
Lefko PR move.
Right.
If you go to Cleveland, you link him with LeBron.
Yes.
There's already the Instagram post where LeBron calls him the young king.
Yeah.
We can do a cross-sport passing of the torch, and you can market this kid in Cleveland as the LeBron of football.
Yep.
Why can you do that? Because nobody has the title the LeBron of football. It doesn't exist. Put him in the city. It has low expectations. And then if you want to move him after 5-6 years when you want to get that next contract somewhere bigger and really capitalize, sure. But Saquon is a kind of guy that I think you link him with LeBron, and it doesn't matter what city he's in.
Yeah, I don't. I agree. It does not matter. It's like, come on, man. I mean, he's amazing. He's amazing.
Amazing.
He is. He's the number one player in the draft. There's no doubt about that. The problem is the position, too. Again, just like we've talked about many times.
But, and I'm just going to say, okay, I'm going to say this. Le'Veon Bell had 80 catches last year.
Yeah.
Le'Veon Bell lines up at wide receiver. Mm-hmm. I think it's a very archaic model to look at positions. In the last few years, there's new positions opening up all the time. Now we have a position called edge. When we first started together 5 years ago, that was not a thing.
Well,
it was defensive ends and outside linebackers, but because they change a lot, we've called it edge.
Well, because the idiots of the world, even the NFL teams who didn't even have that like distinct, like they started to realize, oh, the good football teams separate these guys. They don't just call everybody a defense end.
But what I'm saying is Saquon is as much of a running back as Rodney McLeod is a cornerback. Like these guys, he is a running back, wide receiver. Like you're going to be able to move. He's a chess piece.
He's a weapon. Yes.
He's a weapon. Mm-hmm. I don't look at any of these guys as a running back. This isn't Frank Gore. You know what I mean? He's not running up into the A gap every single time.
No, he's Le'Veon Bell. He's Todd Gurley. I mean, he's Todd Gurley, except he's just quicker.
I want to give a shout out really quick to Josh Fendrick, who nailed his scouting report last year. Malik McDowell looks like he's going to be cut.
But his wrist tape, he's got great wrist tape, looks great with the hands in the ground. So I just, you know.
What do you mean? Oh, his wrist tape.
That was the first thing I said about him.
For people that are new listeners to the podcast, we gave Josh one prospect last year. He scouted Malik McDowell, and he crushed it. He didn't see the potential, and now it looks like he's going to be out of the league, mainly because of off the field.
I got to scout someone for next week. Who am I scouting?
Oh, I would like that. Let me think about that.
Give me someone good. I'll do it on Monday. Good.
The other one thing I want to say is a little props to myself.
Yes.
Did you see that the NFL has eliminated 10 helmets that you can play in next season because they're not ruled safe enough?
Cool.
I've been saying this for a year that there is one helmet, the VICIS helmet. No, Keekly has the neck
The collar.
Thing. This is the Alex Smith, Richard Sherman helmet that is scientifically proven to be safer. And I said, why isn't this mandatory? Well, guess what? The NFL is starting to make the mandatory. Lefko PR strikes again.
Odell post a workout video yet today?
It'll come later.
It'll come later.
Comes at night. He usually drops it around 6:37 o'clock.
Let's give Big Phil a call.
Let's call that fucker.
So we're going to call Big Phil. Let me just see what we got here on the BR app. Rob Gronkowski is going to the Kentucky Derby after purchasing the stake in a horse named Gronkowski. Man. Huh. Just reading a Gronk story.
I know. I heard.
He bought a horse.
He bought stock in the horse. That's called
Never
Gronk.
Buy stocks in horses. I learned that from Rick Pitino. It's a good advice. Never put your money into anything that eats while you're sleeping. It's a waste of money.
Hello, Bleacher Report.
Oh, hello.
Big Phil.
Hey.
Oh, man. You know, I saw Bleacher Report up there, and I thought, oh, I hope it's somebody new and not you two jerk-offs.
It's three jerk-offs. Josh is in the middle here today.
What's that?
Josh is here today.
Well, three jerk-offs.
He decided to work today. He does nothing for the company.
Once in a while.
He's in there making some money.
Real question we want to know is, did you even get a shade darker since being in Barbados?
Did you get any sun?
No, man. You know me. I didn't send you any pictures of me getting into the water, but I had a hat the size of an umbrella. I had my sunscreen shirts on that are long sleeve with the collar up, and so I look like a fool. But
yeah, you
okay.
Look like Powder. Like the movie Powder is Phil Simms's life.
What?
I'll give you, as Lawrence Taylor stole this from a comedian, when he sees me, he always looks at me. We see each other once or twice a year maybe, and, you know, I'll make a comment about him or something. He'll look at me and go, man, you are so white, you must eat chalk. And or he goes, you must, I'm not going to say what comes out. It comes out chalk or something like that. I said, okay, I'm trying to clean it up because I know you guys curse all the time, but I don't.
Yes, right, sure.
Do you curse around Christopher, like in person?
He tries.
I don't think I do. No, I correct him all the time.
He tries not to. He does. And then, like, 3 minutes later, he'll curse, and my kids will be like, Papa!
Yeah. Oh, you're right. Yeah, your son, he's like a friggin' tape recorder. Hey, Papa said this, and he said that. Yeah. Come here, boy. Shut up.
He did. He said that. He did. He said my mom and my dad said something about my mom's brother, my uncle, right? And they like nothing bad, but like something that was on their mind about him. And then he came over the house, and Philip went up to him and was like, you know, Didi and Papa said.
I know. That's right. That's right.
Well, coming up actually going to get a little bit of a scouting report from Philip Simms, the grandson. No, I'm not even kidding, Phil. Philip said some comments to Chris. It's making the show today. The kid is going to be one heck of a scout.
It was actually hilarious. Let's just say it now, he can hear it.
All right. So a D lineman that Chris is not that high on. His name's Harrison Phillips.
Right.
You showed it to Philip.
He's Harrison Phillips. Okay. He wears number 66. Phillips 66. That was one of the first things I wrote in my note. Like, are you serious? This guy's wearing 66. He's a big white guy from Stanford. I think he had the most bench press reps in the whole combine. 42 reps at 225. But I mean, he's just a big old guy, and he can't really do anything. And I don't mean to sound this in a mean way, but there's no way you're going to find a place for him to play in the NFL. And some people have him as one of the top five interior D linemen there are. And, you know, of course, I'm watching games and whatever else, and
don't see it.
I'm like, I don't even how do you put him on the field anywhere? Where does he play? I don't even understand it.
So then Philip comes over.
So Philip, watching
son.
Who you watching? And I'm watching just this guy, Philip, number 66. Like, I don't think he's very good, and he watches a few plays and he goes, yeah, I don't think he's very good too, Dad. I think he should be an offensive lineman. And I was like, I wrote it down in my notes.
So
I was
there
like,
you,
I was like, you know what? This guy should do J.R. Sweezy. Like, that's J.R. And that's what he kind of is, this big, you know, muscled lumbering meathead, right? That would be great as a guard. But he's just not a natural enough, good enough athlete to be a D tackle in the NFL.
Yeah, so you hear that, Phil? Your grandson's going to be a heck of a scout.
Man, hey, listen, my grandson has given his father more information than my son's given me. So I don't know what to say there. You know, listen, that's a great
it's just one of your things. Yes, this is why I brought it up.
Well, I know one of my things, you know, college coaches, of course, their job is to win football games at their school, not worry about the pros.
Yes.
But when you look at certain players, if you go, okay, I could live without him not being there, but I want him to be a pro. The only way he's going to be a pro is this, which I tell high school kids all the time.
Your big thing is going to high school basketball games, and he sees a 6'8 center that's a really big, strong, good athlete, and one of Dad's pet peeves is going, man, he's wasting his time thinking he's going to be an NBA player. If he just goes to left tackle, he'll be a first-round pick.
And well, not even be an NBA player. He's never even going to play in college unless it's Division III.
Right.
You know, there's a kid coming out in the draft this year. I won't tell you his name. He trains down, you know, at the training center we know about. He's a left tackle. He's an unbelievable athlete. I mean, he's just got the look. 6'7". Man, he's athletic. He looks the part. He's going to get drafted. And so he's there training one day. I said, hey, big man, Greg, how you doing? And he goes, who's this? And he goes, oh, this is my brother. Hey, I said, well, what's going on? I said, you know, what do you do? He goes, well, I'm a freshman in college. I play basketball. And I said, okay, let me give you some advice right now. Stop. Go play football for 3 years. You'll be drafted in the first three rounds as a defensive end. You got me? Do you want money or not?
Right.
And his brother laughs. He goes, man, I've been telling him. I said, well, keep telling him. You're way. I said, if you just want to have a good little college career playing basketball and you can talk about it for the rest of your life, oh, I was good in college and nobody's going to care. But if you tell him you played pro football and you got drafted and you made some money, so I haven't seen him in 2 weeks. I'm just wondering if I hit it because – you know me. I kind of wore it out pretty good and just walked right away.
But I was gonna say,
a couple days later, the offensive lineman comes up to me and says, hey, man, that was great, Mr. Sims. I keep telling him, you know, because the brother who's going to get – the one I'm talking about is going to get drafted started out as a basketball player and said, oh – he figured it out.
Right.
Plus,
and
NFL teams.
Over to football while I was in college.
NFL teams always seem to love when a guy played basketball. It means you have good feet. You're athletic. Phil, I got a question
for
you.
Well, you got a good hand eye. You can play. You can adapt. You can be multiple, just like a wide receiver. I want him to be able to do everything, not just. Oh, I'm the receiver to the single side. I'm number one.
Exactly.
You know? Man, you know that day is almost gone. We need players that are versatile, running backs, wide receivers, tight ends. You got to do it all.
Yep. Phil, I got an update for you. We were all rooting for Brett Favre to get Monday Night Football, but the rumors are that he bombed the audition. He did come out today and said that's not true, but yeah.
Yeah, I saw it.
You saw it on the audition?
I would love to hear this audition tape.
Me too.
Yeah. You know, I would love to hear it. And, honestly, good for Brett. He tried, you know. So you can always sit on that tractor and mow the lawn and go out and shoot animals or whatever. Who knows what he's doing down there at farm? So
I love that Phil is from Kentucky, but he's like, yeah, that country bumpkin, because now you're just New Jersey'd out, Phil.
Oh, yeah. Hey, look, when I became a pro, they said there's two things I'm not doing anymore. I'm not cutting grass. And I'm not flying coach. Okay? That's it.
All right, I got another one for you. This is a quote from A.J. McCarron to the family that has such strong arms. I thought this would be appropriate. This is a quote. Me personally, I think a lot of people get sold on big arms. You look at the history of quarterbacks in the NFL, there's been a lot of great QBs in the NFL that haven't had crazy strong arms. How many times do you actually drop back and throw the ball 60 yards? Very rarely. The game is played with timing and accuracy, and if you have those two things, you can be successful.
Yeah, well, yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah.
But, you know, the you know, it's like I wrote my notes about quarterbacking. You know, if you're looking for magic, you know, oh, he's just got it. All the it. I said, okay, go look for it, and you're going to be right about 5 times out of 100, so you're going to get fired all the other times because you're looking for it. So the one thing A.J. McCarron leaves out, which I talk to receivers all the time. I bring this up with Brandon Marshall. When you're running the hitch, just a little short route, he goes, I talked about two guys. He goes, man, I want that ball coming out here so fast and hard so I can grab it and run. Mm. And the thing that's wrong in this respect. Strong arm guys have a confidence and see things differently than the guys that don't have strong arms.
Right.
So they see a wide open receiver, even though it's just a little window, because they're going to throw it through there. And the guy that doesn't, oh, he's calling, I'm going to check it down because I'm managing the game and I'm just playing the position.
Right. And the stats will be good at the end of the day, but when you and I watch the film, we're going to go, man, he missed about 7 opportunities to score touchdowns because he didn't throw it in there or whatever it may be.
Because everybody didn't fall down. That's what, you know, it's like, certain running backs, you got to knock them down twice for them to get 10 yards. And so arm strength always plays a hand in every big game, always. You need four or five power throws in a game that can make a difference.
I love
that. You know, decision making, I mean, come on, listen. How smart do you got to be in this? If he's covered, you don't throw it to him. I mean, they always like, oh, he's an unbelievable decision maker. Yeah, no kidding, because he takes no chances. Oh, that's you know, they don't make enough big plays. Well, we know why. Okay.
Yeah,
get me going. So, AJ, some good thoughts there. But I want my quarterback, yes, I could win with Drew Brees
if
I'm Sean Payton. But, you know, some teams, well, not now, because everything's changed. These offensive coordinators, that's another one here, guys. If we could draft an offensive coordinator or quarterback, I think the coordinators might go 1 through 5.
You're right. You're right.
So we keep talking about all this stuff about these quarterbacks. You give them a really good offensive coordinator, they're going to make them good players.
Right.
There's no doubt. The head coach set the culture, and then the coordinator now can coach his guys, and they can make stars. Look, we say
this
it all
is
the time.
This is why we think Aaron Rodgers is amazing, because it's not that. It's the opposite.
He doesn't have the OC.
He doesn't have it. We watch it and we go, oh, there's nothing there to help him. He's doing a lot of it with his God-given ability.
Well, you know, there's something always about simplicity, too, because it's so simple. You can go through all your reads and all that quick.
Right.
But as we see with him, it seems like, you know, I'm over exaggerating, but it seems like 80% of his throws, it's him moving out of the pocket, just ripping a ball sidearm or doing this or that. That's what it seems like. And as I always say, go to the Super Bowl. I've said this to you before. And watch Tom Brady's first 40 throws. He throws it to the first receiver 32 times.
Right.
And he hits almost all of them. So, you know, that is deception, smartness, whatever you want to say, all that stuff. That's what being a coordinator is about now. And, man, we got a lot of good ones in the NFL.
We do. I don't want to call you Mr. Phil Sims anymore. I want to call you Your Honor, Phil Sims. You have been the judge for something on this podcast that we like to call mascot battles. 2 weeks ago, we had Lion versus Bear. Bear came out victorious. We pulled from the hat on Monday, and the battle was a dolphin versus Paul Brown. Your son drafted first, and he took a dolphin. Sims, would you like to go first in your argument to your pops?
Well, dolphin with Paul Brown. Paul Brown doesn't get any weapons here, okay, right? So this is because he's a Cleveland Brown dad. I'm just explaining that to you. But either way, a dolphin versus Paul Brown, that dolphin is going to whoop the shit out of Paul Brown on land or in water. I'm telling you, Paul Brown gets on the ground and wrestles that dolphin's going to and just slap him besides the face with his
dorsal fin,
and he might take a bite out, too. Okay?
Interesting.
Yes.
Okay.
Hold on, Phil, I have to make my argument. Your Honor.
Go ahead.
First, I'd like to say, if the court would allow this, that Paul Brown was one of the greatest coaches in the history of the NFL, and I mean no disrespect, but I want to say that because he was so great, he'll beat the Dolphin. Paul Brown was an innovator. He invented the modern face mask, so you know that he's going to be properly guarded. He invented the practice squad, so you know he's had ample practice fighting against dolphins. He's the first coach to use game film to scout an opponent's. He studied their weaknesses, and that blowhole, it's ready to be taken advantage of.
Ooh,
first of all, hold on, Phil, please. Let me finish. First, if we're doing a human versus a dolphin, that alone is checkmate, all right? It's a different species. Number two, there have been great dolphins in our lifetime, Christopher, Flipper, Snowflake. But Paul Brown helped create a dolphin that's more powerful than those two combined, Don Shula. If he can create a dolphin legend, then he can end a normal dolphin. And third, bringing back that great dolphin Flipper, as that story was told, because I'm sure Big Phil watched that many times, Flipper was harmed by a spear attack. That's how he bonded with the young boy. Well, Paul Brown was a phenomenal pole vaulter in high school. He's adept at manning a long stick, perfect for puncturing a porpoise.
That's not allowed.
Phil, it is clear that the side that you should side with, if my opponent tries to argue that Paul Brown is currently dead, well, then he would actually be arguing against himself. If Paul Brown is dead, it's impossible for a dolphin to kill him. He's already dead. If the dolphin decides to consume the legend, he'll likely choke, similar to the franchise as of late. I rest my case.
You have too much time on your hands.
Oh, okay. I'll tell you, that was well presented and everything. I'm not going to be the judge. I'm sitting in the jury box.
Okay.
And Adam, you came up and were talking to me, and I was like, ooh, this is really good. Then he kept going on and on. I said, oh, I can't pay attention anymore. My ass is going to sleep. In fact, he's talking so much, I'm going to vote against his ass.
Yeah, that's right.
And you are right. I did watch Flip Flipper growing up.
Yes.
And I love animals, and I love dolphins, and Flipper is one bad dude. That's all I know. He can talk to humans.
So who are you picking?
Animal's ass. He could get humans on land out of trouble. So,
right.
And he could talk. I mean, what else? Yeah, I'm going with Flipper.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, we're going with Flipper on land. I mean, the water, we know it's over. I mean, can Paul swim?
Well, yeah, no, but see, Flipper, he was even great. He can handle problems in or out of the water.
I brought up nostalgia.
We'll see who wins this poll. I will bet you a dinner Flipper wins.
Okay.
I guess we'll have to prove it. Let's dig up Paul and let's get him against Flipper. Come on.
Well, he's talking about the debate as far as from the people on the podcast when they vote. He's saying Flipper's going to win.
Oh, the vote.
And if Paul Brown wins, he'll take us to dinner.
All right. Phil, thanks for nothing.
Well, you know, only thing that worries me, I saw Adam without a shirt once. So it cost me a lot of money.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Did we got any football here today? Or we just, you know, I don't know. I think the draft is coming about.
All right. Go ahead. We're going to give you, look, Lefko can't take it because he's got to open his big mouth for the whole show. So you're talking into his time here.
10-minute filibuster about dolphins.
I know. Okay. All right. Just give us anything from the draft. I know you've been watching more and more players here.
What's
anything that's jumping
loins?
Out to you? You can just go off on whatever you want.
Oh, I can't eat. No, it's too. Listen,
too broad.
I'm organizing my thoughts today, and I am sitting here, I didn't do it. Nicole types them out as I write them down, and you should see some of my, because she can't read my writing. So, okay, I got it. Don't worry. But I'm like. Sitting here now, and after a couple hours, I'm like, damn, I'm confused. I can't remember what's going on. So, you know, I don't know. I'm just watching everything. I'll just say this. I can't wait for the draft.
Ooh.
You know, I really can't just because of all the stuff and everything. Now it's amazing. Now on TV, it's turning to Josh Allen. Oh, no. And it you know what makes me starting to believe it? That he will be taken by the Browns. Just this. The staunch. Unbelievable, Sam Darnold, once in a lifetime, and what was the other word I heard? Trent Dilfer said it today, which I know he watches a lot, but he's some really word that I would never use, that he's going to be basically once in a lifetime kind of player.
Transcendent?
What's that?
Transcendent?
Transcendent. What the hell? Transcendent? You know, I write a lot of things down about quarterback. You know, first thing I wrote down, what's a franchise quarterback? And because we're going to talk about it. And I said, well, first off, don't even start out with telling me he's a winner or he has it. Because I don't care. So I did the it. He's a winner. Now, how many college quarterbacks have we seen win national championships, go 34-2 in their career and not even make an NFL team?
Right. Or John Elway, who went 3-7 in his senior year and retired as the most winning quarterback in the history of the NFL.
Wow. Yeah, I know. So there we go. I love all that. And then, of course, the arm strength thing with A.J. McCarron. So we kind of splashed that around. Sam Darnold just, and I like him too. Yes, he's a first round quarterback. He could be a really, but. How they're now going, well, you know, Josh Allen is going to probably go first.
It's on
TV today.
It's the Southern California Mafia. That's what it is right now.
They can't believe it.
All right, so wait, this is the last thing. And then seriously, answer this quick and we're hanging up.
All right,
I'll
make it quick.
Okay. If I want you, the GM, and this is not anybody else, the GM. This is you, Phil Simms. You're running the New York Giants.
Oh, boy.
Yep, oh, boy.
Well, I probably won't answer this.
All right, I'm just saying, who would you pick if you were the New York Giants?
If you had the first pick.
If you had the second pick, like they do, and you're there, okay,
who's
would you take?
Number one on your big board?
If Josh Allen is there, I'm taking Josh Allen.
Okay. Now, if Josh Allen's not there, are you going to go Saquon or Chubb? Or are you going to go or another quarterback?
That is a great question. No, I don't think I would take a quarterback. I would probably go Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, that's the way I feel too.
Breaking news, Phil Simms says the Giants should take Josh Allen or Saquon Barkley. We're sending out a BR alert right now.
It's going everywhere. It's going national right now.
You know, you two are, you talk over each other, I can't hear you. I mean, it's like talking, man, it's like talking to a two-year-old. I'm going to go inside and talk to my two-year-old grandson. I understand him better than I do you two.
All right, well, we're hanging up on you. But
love you,
maybe
Phil.
Just come
see
here.
You guys.
Why don't you come here next week, and we'll do it in person.
Ooh.
Next week is Wednesday.
No, we can't do next week. The week after, you're doing it.
We can do Tuesday.
You know, what are you doing next week?
We're doing it every day. We'll call you.
I'm coming to New York next Wednesday.
Okay.
I got to do something. I just don't know exactly what. Well, we'll talk about it. I'd like to do it in person.
All right, Dad. We'll see you.
See ya.
Bye.
See ya, Phil.
He's gone off the rails today.
This was great.
This has been juicy.
This is great. I can't believe I wasn't sure if he would. He gets very careful about not answering anything Giants.
Right, because it gets picked up by news.
Right.
He's going to get spread.
He doesn't want to be disrespectful to the Giants. I mean, but
I'm going to clip out that.
Well, I know.
Is he going to be pissed when that becomes news?
No. He knows we're going to make it news. He knows. I know he's watched Chubb and Barkley, and he's getting there where he's watched all like the top three, four, five guys at every position here.
Right.
So I know he has a little context. That's why I wanted to hear him say it.
Let's dive into Sims' draft notebook. You already mentioned the defensive lineman that doesn't make sense in the top five, Harrison Phillips.
Top five of the D-line.
Top five of the position.
Yes.
Of the D-line.
Don't even understand that one.
But there is a D-lineman, because I would ask you, well, then who takes his spot?
Right.
And you have a guy that's not being mentioned in the top five that you think should be, the kid from Florida State.
Oh, I mean, okay, so the kid Josh Sweat, right? All right, I mean, I'm going to just pull up his measurables here.
I gotcha. Okay. I'll pull up his measurables.
So, but Josh Sweat, okay, here's a guy. Now, there's some medical questions, right? But he's one of the I'm getting to the point here where, you know, of course, I'm still watching, and I'm almost done with everybody I got to watch.
You have some offensive linemen left and some tight ends.
Yes, so I'm almost there. But I've gone back to, you know, whatever people have said are top five, top six in their position.
Right.
And now I'm getting to the point where I'm getting deeper down the list and I'm starting to just go with guys that I see numbers that are pretty amazing. And Josh Sweat, of course, is one of those guys at 6'4", 251, and he ran a 4'5", 340 and has a 39.5-inch vertical and 124-inch broad jump. That's pretty phenomenal.
And you're like, okay, so these are all top of the charts.
So let me go see what this guy's about, because his sack aren't that great and all this.
Right.
So, and I remember, in fact, I want to write what I saw.
I want to say this too. This is going to be our fifth draft together.
Right.
This is something that Sims doesn't miss on. When it gets to the guys that no one's talking about that are athletes that for some reason don't get mentioned, Sims is usually very good at identifying them.
Yeah. So I thank you. Thank you for that. This is the first thing I wrote. I wrote, damn, I know this guy. I always thought number 9 on Florida State looked freaky.
Yeah.
Okay, because I don't know who the hell these guys are when I'm watching the air, but I always looked at him. I was like, damn, I don't know who that number 9
is. He looks good in the jersey,
but damn, he looks like he's an NFL player. So I turned it on, and I go, damn, wait, this is the edge pass rusher? Wait, okay, it's play 5. It's play 10. He's playing head up at 5 technique, like a defensive big Richard Seymour, okay?
Like just setting the edge.
He's not even setting the edge. He's literally head up on offensive tackles in the ACC or Florida and the SEC, and just go. And his play strength is off the charts, first of all. I mean, it's off the charts. It's Jadeveon Clowney ish. I would argue that he pushes tackles back as consistently as some of the good defensive tackles in the draft. Like the top tier D.
Which is probably why they're playing him there.
Right. So, and you made the point too, like, oh, well, so Florida State was just trying to get their best 11 on the field. You're exactly right, Adam. That's what's happened. He is a guy that has, in the NFL, he is going to be an outside linebacker or what we would say maybe a 4-3 rush end. He's so strong at the point of attack, he could be a crash end, which would be the strong side 4-3 defense end, right, with the tight end.
What range are you looking for this guy?
Well, it's going to be about the medicals that I've checked out. Because, of course, when I watch him too, and then I call a few people, and I'm like, why is nobody talking about one of the freakiest people I've seen on film to this point? And there was some few medical issues.
He dislocated his knee in high school, tore his ACL, almost had his leg amputated.
Okay, and you could see a little of that, like Alabama game when I watched that full game back. There were some moments where I was like, damn, there's something, his knee is a little
issue. Does he run weird?
He ran weird then, but then as the season goes along,
it looks better.
It looks better, right.
Interesting.
Because you notice stuff like that.
I do.
When there's something off with the body.
I definitely do. I mean, I'm a self-proclaimed master
body
of
expert.
Naked men.
Yeah.
But first of all, the body, the numbers that we just explained at the combine, they're very close to Jadeveon Clowney, except Jadeveon Clowney was 267, I think, so he's 16 pounds heavier. But the kid doesn't really get to play the position he'll play in the NFL, which is coming off the edge as a freak top-tier pass rusher.
And Bill Belichick said that in his press conference that I watched on Friday.
What'd he say?
He was just like listing the amount of things that he looks at people, and it's like, were they asking him to do what he should be doing?
Right, exactly.
Is he capable of doing what we would need him to do?
Exactly.
It takes a little bit of projection.
Clowney was 266 when he came out.
So he's 15 pounds heavier, and they ran the same 40 time.
And he's got 2 inches.
This kid has a better vertical than Jadeveon Clowney.
Correct.
So that's, I mean, that in itself, okay? This is where...
Same broad jump, too.
All the scouting experts and everything, like, you just got to look at that right there and go, the NFL first two rounds are about eliteness, and you're crazy. As long as his medicals check out, he is going in the top 40 of the draft. I can guarantee that. Mm. Unless people just go, his knee is really messed up
scary.
And it's concerned, right? So that's the big thing. But he's a guy that certainly, don't be shocked if you hear about this guy as a superstar in the next few years. But I was really intrigued with him, and he was a phenomenal all-around football player.
Awesome. So that stuff you're only going to get here, Josh Sweat, Florida State. I say that Sims nails it a lot, and last year was a great example. Through the entire process, you were going, why is nobody talking about Carl Lawson out of Auburn?
Right.
He goes to the Bengals in what round?
Fourth, I believe.
Like the fourth or fifth round.
Right.
Fendrick looked that up. And then he ends the year with a ton of sacks. And people
like
are like,
half,
how did we
sacks?
Miss on this guy?
Right.
He was all over Aaron Rodgers in that Green Bay game,
right.
I remember.
Right.
So we are creating the Carl Lawson Memorial Award for what are people watching?
Right.
And you have a guy.
Give it to me.
Rutgers.
Give it to me.
Rutgers!
Are you? You went back and you watched,
Jersey.
And Kimoko Ture. You left and went, Lefko, I found a first round pick.
Hands, again.
Never heard of him.
Again, right. And now, again, he's a guy that I've had him on my list because I've kept going, I mean, when he combine happened, I went, damn, he's 6'5", 252, and he ran 4.65, and he's, you know, again, length of arms, things like that. That's the other thing that Sweat had, all right, just going back to Florida State. He had 34 5/8 inch arms.
That's enormous.
Every team's going to love that. That's longer arms than Jadeveon Clowney.
It's like LaRaven Clark-esque
That's
arms.
Right. That's crazy long. So every scheme's going to love him. You got it? You okay? You on your guy?
Okay. I pulled up his measurables.
Yeah, I just want to. All right, so I just want to make sure.
6'5", 252.
6'5", 252, ran a 4.65 at the combine.
Only 2 years of high school football.
Right.
Which so he's fresh.
Which is fresh.
What'd you see on the film?
Freak. I mean, this to me, he is definitely one of the top 32 players in the draft. And I know I haven't seen some of the interior offensive linemen, but it's not going to change it because this is a pass rusher. It's not going to matter.
Right.
He is definitely one of the most natural pass rushers in the draft. As far as body movements go, like I've told you, Chubb is a better player than Harold Landry.
Right.
Harold Landry has some very special elite pass rushing skill set that you see out of other elite pass rushers, right? You try to follow formulas from your past that make people successful. Like Von Miller, that's why he was the number two pick in the draft. He said, wow, he's 40. His 10-yard split's amazing.
Yeah.
And he can put his right shoulder down to the ground to where he can turn the corner and it's like an inch above his foot, but he's still running 4 or 5 as he's running around the corner. And that's the thing this kid can do.
Really?
This
he's
kid
got
is,
Ben like that.
He has got tremendous Ben. And, of course, he can set the edge. He's not as strong as a Josh Sweat at the edge. But, again, it's another guy. And I didn't even talk about this with Josh Sweat either. But, like, Josh Sweat, Harold Landry, this guy, Kimoko Ture, am I saying it right?
Ture.
This is the other thing. Like, so the numbers, and then I want to talk about the 10-yard split. Because with this position, the 10-yard split is going to be...
It's everything.
Everything. I mean, nobody really cares
explode.
What they run. How do they run to the 8-yard point to get to the quarterback, right? And these guys have numbers that are like elite NFL receivers in the 10.
Wow.
But this guy, I don't know why nobody's talked about him.
Maybe it's because they don't want anyone to know
about
him.
Well, I'm sure that's the NFL for sure, but I just don't even understand how...
The scouts,
the media people, like...
Probably because he played for Rutgers.
I mean, maybe. But again, the numbers of the combine should lead you at some point to go, I got to watch just because the numbers are so good.
And that's what happened with Carl Lawson
exactly
last year.
Exactly right. So I just, in the end, I'm getting to that point where I looked at him and I just said, wow. I mean... You know, is he as good as Landry or Davenport or Chubb? No. But he is a first-round pass rusher for sure. And I even wrote at the end, I mean, He could be Yannick Ngakoue.
Ooh.
He's certainly a better prospect than Ngakoue was coming out. And he's a better prospect than DeMarcus Lawrence was as well.
Wow.
Who was DeMarcus end of the first or early second? I think he was pick 35, right?
Yes.
Or something in there. So to me, yes, he screams it. He could play 4-3 rush end, which is Yannick Ngakoue, weak side defensive end on a 4-3 line. Or he could play a 3-4 outside linebacker.
Is Ngakoue your PPC?
Yeah, I mean, he reminds me. Yes, Ngakoue now.
Okay.
Ngakoue on coming out in the draft, I saw things that I go, ooh, I like. He's got a pretty good first step. But he ran a 4.7 at the combine, and I was like, man, maybe he's not quite as fast.
Yep.
This guy, I really don't have those questions with. So there, again, I mean, he is definitely a top 40 pick. For me, I would look at it, and I'm going to do my mock draft at some point this weekend because I have to do it. I mean, he's going to somebody for me in the top. It's just when I get down to it, he's going to be somewhere 25 through 32.
Put him on the Jaguars. They need him.
Might as well, right?
All right, so that means,
hey,
guys.
I appreciate that.
Or the, I mean, what are the Patriots got? What, 21 and 32?
21 and 32.
That's another guy I was just like, damn, I mean, Bill's going to watch this guy and go, okay, he can 3-4.
And we know that Bill loves Rutgers.
Yes.
So one guy that we think that you believe is a tad overrated is Harrison Phillips.
Yeah.
One guy that you believe is underrated is Josh Sweat. And the guy that no one's talking about that Sims is trying to put you onto is Kamoko Touré out of Rutgers.
Right.
Do not be surprised if he goes early.
Yeah.
I want to get to some rumors that you're hearing.
Yeah.
We've already talked about the John Dorsey rumor.
Right.
You're hearing a little love affair for the Broncos at 5.
Yeah, the Broncos, I have heard that they are all over Denzel Ward at 5 from Ohio State, who, again, is a phenomenal football player. I mean, phenomenal.
And this would be so that they could have the trio of Chris Harris Jr., who they're going to give a little bit more money to, Bradley Roby, and then they would add Denzel Ward to the mix.
Yes, and you know, when I first heard it, I mean, of course, hey, that's great, certainly.
He's not your favorite corner.
He's not my favorite corner.
You ranked him 4.
I think he's 4 for me, yes. He's really good. This is a really strong class of some high elite corners.
It sounds like the quarterbacks. Just because you have Sam Darnold 5, you still have him in the top 20.
Exactly right. I don't want to sound like I'm trying to be some mean hater here. It's just, yes.
When people see ranks, they go,
I know.
You like him, you hate him.
Exactly right. No, Ward's film is so clean. I just think his game as translating to the NFL level is not going to be quite what everybody thinks it was at the college level. And I think he's going to have I think at the end of the day, he's going to be more of a nickel Chris Harris type of guy,
right,
which is maybe why they're doing
it. Hey, man, it's not bad to have 2 Chris Harrises on your team.
But this kid is like, Ward is a really good football player. He's better than Eli Apple, who was what, the number 10 pick?
Yeah, but that
was a bad pick.
Yeah.
And he's not nearly as good as Marshawn Lattimore to me, who was the 11 pick.
Right.
And, you know, again, it depends. But, yeah, as an outside corner, I like Ward. But as an outside corner, I don't like him as much as Jair Alexander, Mike Hughes from Central Florida, or my favorite long corner in Carlton Davis.
Yes.
That would be it. But, yeah, I mean, again, I think that's a little high for Denzel.
Broncos are going to be so interesting.
They are.
Especially because, like, if there's trade opportunities, do they want Quentin Nelson to anchor the line?
Right.
Do they want a Bradley Chubb if he's still available? Do they go with a quarterback with all that? I have no idea what the Broncos are doing.
I know.
The other rumor that you're hearing is that a guy that one of the greatest coaches in the history of college football said it's one of the best players he's ever coached.
Yeah.
He's won national championships.
Mm-hmm.
He has the ability to play multiple positions. And yet that last fact, that he's played multiple positions, could have him fall.
Yeah.
And his name's Minka Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
What are you hearing?
Well, yeah, it's not like people are going, oh, Chris, he's going to fall. It's more I'm just reading between the lines of what some of my friends are saying, right? And there's 2 things that come up when I hear negative talk about Minka Fitzpatrick. What position is he? What position is he? So his versatility is actually hurting him.
So they're thinking of him as a tweener, not as versatile.
Exactly.
Which, okay.
Okay, right.
What's
and to me, he's
here?
Not a corner, right? That's the first thing. I got to wipe it out of your mind, everybody. He is not a corner in the NFL. He is a Pro Bowl, all-pro free safety that you would bring down in the nickel situation, and he could cover slot receivers because he's very quick.
Like a Malcolm
and
Jenkins type of deal.
Right. He's a better version of Malcolm Jenkins or a Devin McCourty, right? That's
gotcha.
Who he basically is. You're exactly right,
though. You think he's
right,
better
though.
Than Devin?
I do think he is.
Wow.
Yes, as a physical
specimen.
What's
the second thing you hear?
Well, the second thing I hear is, he's from Alabama, and, you know, people are scared of Alabama DBs because I know Landon Collins and Drake Kirkpatrick
stinks.
Didn't quite work out. But I understand what they're saying. They're worried about people, you know, people worry about Alabama guys being maxed out. You know, Nick is he's a secondary coach. So they go, well, damn, they're good in college, but they've been taught things that NFL players know at the college level.
Yeah, but Nick talks about Minkah in a way that I've never heard him talk
and
about.
And I saw
anybody.
I was with Gabe, the cameraman here, when he had the pick six in the state championship game, right, to help Brandon Winbush and Rashawn Gary and Jabril Peppers. They were all in the field, too. And he stood out. Like, he is, and everything you hear from Gabe's school is the kid is, like, in love with football, obsessed.
Oh.
But the Bama thing is scaring people. And, you know, people, oh, you know, I mean, Cyrus Jones and that not working out and D. Milner. Well, I wanted to go, like, damn. You know, first of all, you all
They're
screwed
different.
Up on Cyrus Jones too. You all were idiots. I don't know what you. I watched the film and said, "There's no way I would take him in the first three rounds." But
what about D. Milner?
D. Milner
is the guy.
D.
That
Milner
ruined it for a lot of these Alabama guys.
He did, and I'll say I'll be the first one. Like D. Milner is a guy I looked at and was like, "Ooh, he's going to be good." I was working in New England at the time, and I saw everything that I liked to see. Now he did have a foot injury, and that's what people forget too. That kind of derailed things early on in his career.
And that is everything,
right? And he didn't even get to go to training camp, and then they threw him out in the middle of the season, and he struggled,
right.
And it all just snowballed from there. So hey, again, but that's what I'm hearing, and if that's so be it, man. Somebody outside the top 10 is going to get Minkah Fitzpatrick, who, for my money, is one of the most can't-miss prospects in the draft.
Awesome. All right, we have one thing left, Sims. Shaquem Griffin.
Oh, baby.
You just watched him.
Yeah.
We made a little news here when I kind of went and defended Shaquem Griffin. He ran a 4.38. He put up darn near, 20 bench reps?
I gotcha. Yeah. I think it was 21, I want to say, but...
I feel like it might have been 19. I don't know.
Either way, it was impressive.
He is the one-armed football player that was on the UCF undefeated Golden Knights.
He has two arms. He has one hand.
Correct. I apologize.
Yeah.
But a lot has been made about what he could be. He came out on Bleacher Report with an article and was like, you can keep doubting me if you want. He put up 20 reps in the bench press. But Sims, I've been waiting for this.
Yep.
You actually watched the film.
I did.
And what did you take away?
Well, I mean, he pops off the screen. His athleticism is, I mean, it's like watching Minkah Fitzpatrick. I mean, it's that explosive.
He just moves differently than everybody
His
else.
His straight-ahead explosion and speed is every bit of 4.38. Like, he ran. It wasn't just like, oh, he trained with a good trainer. And
Or you know, maybe it was just his adrenaline pumping.
Yeah, oh, it was a
no
big
one
day.
Else has adrenaline, but for him.
Yeah, it just happened to be on that day. His was pumping harder. The speed translates.
So that's there.
It's there.
Okay.
Now, he's a projection. It's a little bit like Hassan Reddick last year, right?
Gotcha.
Who maybe I'm wrong about. You know, I love
at 200. How much does he weigh, Fender?
227.
He ain't playing defensive end in the NFL.
Freak no.
Very like good.
There was a YouTube comment. Is Sims trying to watch his language?
I
more?
Am because Joe Yenarella is on my case.
so this is the middle linebacker guy.
This is a middle linebacker guy. Yes, he is more. He is Ryan. All right. So to put it into context of what you're saying, he's the same size as Landon Collins. He's smaller than Cam Chancellor. So that does not scream defensive end to me, okay? And the defensive end thing, and I'm not trying to be funny here, the one-hand thing is going to be an issue at the defensive end thing or even outside linebacker.
What did you see on the film in which the hand was an issue?
Okay, so rushing from the right side of the defense. Right side of the defense, the left offensive tackle, right?
Gotcha.
Which
hand is he missing?
He's missing his left hand.
Okay.
So that inside arm, he can't do the inside
push.
With that arm off that side. And again, I'm not trying to be funny here.
No, this is a true scouting report.
It's a true knock.
So the thing that I see a lot of defensive linemen do where they do a stiff
like
arm.
Like the Khalil Mack, right?
Yes.
He's the master of that. Let me get low and I'm going to put my inside arm into your front shoulder.
My question is he trying to do that move?
He does it on the other side with the good hand.
Okay.
But he's not going to be able to do it, which is going to take one thing off his resume to where offensive tackles go, I don't have to worry about that.
Gotcha.
So I don't have to worry about setting for that.
Shrinks.
Exactly right. Setting the edge from the outside, it's going to be an issue. When Rob Gronkowski gets his hands on this guy, if he's playing outside linebacker, Rob Gronkowski is going to own him.
If he's still playing.
Or whatever. I know you're being funny. And you see it enough in college to where you go, ooh, I don't like that.
Okay.
All right? So now, he's all over the place, and he is so explosive, and he's fun to watch. But yes, he's more Ryan Shazier or Telvin Smith.
Mm.
And
Will the hand be an issue at that position?
It's going to be an issue. This is where I think teams will chicken out who are going to like him and maybe want to do that because they're going to go, damn, am I really going to draft a guy with one hand? I mean, I'm like, that's going to be a real question.
Yeah, of course.
And they're also going to be like, damn, you know, gosh, if he misses that big tackle in the AFC divisional game,
everyone's going to go,
I mean, you drafted a guy with one hand. What'd you expect? So it's very shallow. But these are some shallow people making these decisions, too.
Yeah.
So that has to be taken into account.
You're evaluating the player.
The player. But, man, if you put him in the middle of the field and let him go be Ryan Shazier, I mean, he is fearless hitter. Mm. He's got great instincts. And there's really nothing athletically not to like about him. It's just going to be you have to have a plan for him.
Talent-wise.
He can almost be a nickel back if you want to go big nickel.
Sure.
He's going to be a great blitzer. Like an occasional blitzer,
yeah.
Or what I call a green dogger, right? Like I'm covering the tailback man-to-man. He's blocking, and now I'm going to fly in.
Right.
And all of a sudden the quarterback's like, boy, I didn't see you blitzing, and all you get hit. He's going to be great at all that.
Talent-wise, what range are you putting him in?
I wrote he's got to go in the top 45.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's a top two-round pick.
Definitely. He has to.
How high could he go?
I mean, I wouldn't be mad at somebody taking him at the end of the first, something like that. I don't think it'll happen. You know, he's going to the draft, so I took that into account. I mean, he's going to the draft.
So you go to the draft. What they do is they pull a lot of the NFL teams, mm-hmm. and they see what range they think you're going to go in. And if a lot of NFL teams are saying, I have a first-round, second-round grade, you might get an invitation.
Right.
And if he's getting an invitation,
that means the teams have called him and their agent basically and already said, like, listen, if you're there at 38, we're taking you.
Are you sure, though, it's not like ESPN or the NFL Network being like, this kid is a talk. Like, we know we're going to talk about
That's
him.
Exactly what I thought. I mean, I thought the same thing. Yeah, I went into this with a negative mindset. Like, right. I'm going to watch a one-handed outside linebacker.
Right. Like, it's a sideshow.
Right.
Almost.
Like, okay. But no, he is legit. I mean, he really is. So
I'm so happy I went on that rant.
Good. You are. It was a great rant. He's a really good football player. You just got to figure out what you want to do with him. Maybe he's Cam Chancellor. Maybe that's what you know, one of the funny things I realized, I was like, damn, if his brother was as fast as he was, he would have been a first-round corner. Mm. But
it's true, because I remember around the combine, he was being asked by the media a lot about switching to safety, and he didn't want to have anything to do with it.
Yeah.
I think position changes around the draft, people get very stubborn.
Yeah.
They're being evaluated all the time. It's a lot. Once you get to the team, and you're out there with the players, and you see how big defensive linemen are in the NFL,
right. And we're all
changes your perspective.
Exactly. And we're all underestimating, as you guys know, because you've seen left tackles in the NFL.
It's insane.
They are truly walking out of a cave. Like, they're cavemen. Okay.
Yes.
And then their short area quickness and stuff is what I don't think everybody always realizes.
At like, that weight,
at
to be able to
weight,
move that
at
fast.
At 330, some of these elite left tackles, you know, you could take some of the best guards in the NBA and they'd go, damn, I'm having a hard time getting around them in one-on-one basketball.
Yeah.
That's how athletically gifted they are. I mean, yeah. So I don't think he could be that outside linebacker pass rusher type because against those guys, first of all, the size. Once they get used to his speed and see it, and of course all week everybody's going to go, they're going to put their corners over there to rush, and then they're going to get to the game and go, oh, okay, this
what
is
kind
no
of defensive systems would he fit in the best?
Yeah, I mean,
like team wise.
Yeah, I think of Cam Chancellor and that type of thing.
Seattle,
right? Jacksonville with a Telvin Smith. I mean, he's going to fit in any system other than I think a true 3-4.
So I could see maybe a Rams. And what they're doing with Mark Barron and kind of the fast guys
That's
there.
That's right. I mean,
maybe a Todd Bowles in New York, maybe in Arizona.
Yeah. I got to piece together needs and all that, which I haven't quite got there
yet.
But
you see him as a possible end of the first round pick?
Yes. He's right, definitely one of the 45 best specimens in the draft.
All right. Shaquem Griffin. We gave you some Kamoko Touré, some Josh Sweat. I think this has been a great show.
The thing what I think people are
I'm
missing.
I'm upset I didn't tell Phil what Peter King said. But we also didn't tell Phil about Joe Montana. Do we tell Phil that we're doing this or no?
Well, yeah, no, let's the hell with Phil. We don't need to tell him.
We'll tell him once we get it going.
This is a cool thing. Big Phil's paying attention to us, though, because he knew we had Joe Montana on the pod last week. Yeah,
who do you think's
from
telling
Barbados.
Him?
I think my mom has the Instagram.
Okay, I was going to say, I think your sister is on Instagram.
And she
and then
is,
she
too.
Definitely,
right.
Definitely yes. Deidre.
Yes, but she wasn't with them last week, so he was obviously doing it with my mom. Right.
Yep.
Yeah. Anything
doing
else?
It with just my mom in Barbados.
That's it.
And that is the end of the show. Thank you guys for listening. We will see you for the NFL draft.
Anything else?
Nope. That's it.
Monday, we are going to have Sam Darnold on set with Sam Darnold's mom.
Can't wait.
Look, I've thought about it. I'm not roasting Sam Darnold. I'm going to let Sims teach Sam Darnold. That's
whatever.
What we're going to do.
Maybe he can teach us how to be cool. And
I'm going to work on my chin. Yeah, I'm going to get a chin plant.
No chance.
And then Tuesday, we're going to have some phone calls with who?
We got a lot scheduled for next week.
Damn,
we got Chubb. We got Derwin James. We have Josh Rosen working on Josh Allen. That's not confirmed yet.
So these are all cool phone conversations. That will likely come out Tuesday. And then Wednesday, we're going to be doing a crossover pod with the guys from Stick to Football. I am going to be the GM. Sims is going to be our director of pro player personnel. Matt Miller is going to be our lead of college scouting.
Yes.
And then we're going to have Connor Rogers as our regional scout.
I'm going to be in a meeting.
And Fetcher's going to be working. And we're going to go through the top five picks, and they need to convince me in 15 minutes who each team should take. It's going to be fun. And then Thursday, why watch the draft on ESPN and only hear about Josh Allen for an hour when you can join us on Bleacher Report Facebook Live? It's me, Sims, and Miller, and it's unfiltered, it's honest, and we're just doing every single pick for the first round. It's going to be fun, and then why not come back and join us on Friday for the second and third?
I'm glad you got your cough away. Okay, good, because you're holding it in right now. You're about to cough. But I do want to say one more thing about my Friends of Jacqueline charity that I'm involved in. I'm going to throw it one more time because it's
for
a good cause,
and
I'm trying to help people out. But again, Friends of Jacqueline, I'm trying to, host a event, and it's a great charity.
It's
I'm trying not to read
charity off
the script here either way, but it's helping kids overcome cancer, helping their family, helping them live out their dreams. We had a kid, young Charlie, in here had a brain tumor, and he's doing great. But again, if you could donate money to it, we're not going to be mad at you.
I have the website.
Please give it to us, because I butchered it last time.
bit.do/helpcure.
bit.do/helpcure.
Cure.
Help cure.
C-U-R-E.
Yes.
Help cure.
bit.do/helpcure.
Yes. Friends of Jacqueline.
I didn't know that Sims could be a good guy, but he's being a great one. And you should support what he supports. Friends of Jacqueline.
Thank you, Captain.
Yes. For Sims.
Peace out, homies.
For Fedrick.
Good night, everybody.
And for the LEFKOE.
Man.
I say good night, good evening, and good day. We will holler at you later. Happy draft. We're a week away. See you soon.